Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. Some legislative leaders are renewing their push for a highly restrictive voter ID law in the wake of this week's U.S. Supreme Court decision on the Voting Rights Act. They're also considering a host of other proposals to make it more difficult to vote, from shortening the early voting period to eliminating Sunday voting and ending same-day registration at early voting sites. Here to talk about it and the looming unemployment benefit cliff for 70,000 workers is Representative Greer Martin from Wake County. Representative Martin, thank you very much for being with us on News and Views. I know you're busy. We appreciate your time.
Glad to be here. Thank you, Chris.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, for a moment. They struck a key provision of the Voting Rights Act this week, and it looks like some legislative leaders are now thinking they can roll out a much more restrictive voter ID bill, maybe put some other voter suppression measures in it, a limit on early voting. We've even heard talk of eliminating same-day registration at early voting. What's your take on the reaction in Raleigh to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on the Voting Rights Act?
I do think that the folks who are trying to suppress voters are going to feel emboldened by the Supreme Court decision. Even when the preclearance regime was firmly in place and acting as a restriction on abuses, these folks were not at all shy about their intent to suppress voters and the specific measures they were going to put in place to do that. Now, with preclearance gone, they're going to feel no restrictions at all, and I expect them to press forward pretty aggressively and pretty quickly.
And what do you think of the idea? I mean, do we need a strict voter ID law, and do we need to make it more difficult for people to vote?
No, certainly. We are a democracy, and our democracy can only flourish if everyone has free access to the ballot. If we could be convinced that there is a serious threat to the integrity of our ballot, we should certainly take prompt action. There's no such evidence out there of any significant threat at all to the integrity of our ballots. And in the absence of that, we need to pursue a policy of trying to spread the ballot to everyone possible. I worked really hard last session and also the session before to make it much easier for my fellow deployed service members to cast a ballot overseas. And if we're making it easier for folks all the way around the world to vote, certainly we need to be doing the same thing instead of the opposite here in North Carolina.
Another big issue this week, July 1st, federal emergency unemployment benefits will end for 70,000 workers in North Carolina because of the effective date of a new unemployment law. Democrats had a press conference this past week urging Republicans to change the effective date. What are your thoughts now as that deadline is right around the corner?
This is both short-sighted and callous. It makes no sense from a moral point of view, and it really, I don't think, makes any sense from an economic point of view. These are folks who have been hurt the hardest by our recession and are continuing to suffer. And we see some encouraging signs that our economy is turning around, but nothing tells us that full recovery is immediately around the corner. And so these are folks who want to work, who have worked in the past, and are eager to get back in the workforce, but our economy is not permitting that yet. And so I think if we can just allow them to survive just a little bit longer, they'll be productive members of our workforce again soon. In the meantime, right now, we're essentially taking them out of our economy, and that slows our economic recovery.
The conferees on the House budget, House and Senate budget and tax reform are meeting behind closed doors trying to come up with an agreement. What are some of the things that you're hoping to see when we see a final budget compromise come out of those back rooms?
Anything I might hope to see is not likely to come out there, assuming that they follow our rules that the conference must limit itself to matters that are in controversy between the House and the Senate. Garbage in, garbage out. I haven't seen anything in either House's budget that gives me optimism that something good is going to emerge. I can tell you what I would like to have seen. If anyone had made a serious attempt at tax reform, I think folks on both sides of the aisle would be very interested in supporting that, something that legitimately sought to transform North Carolina's tax system from a mid-20th century tax system to one that suits the economic needs of a 21st century state. Instead of what we have is just two different proposals on how to shift the tax burden away from the poor and middle class, or onto the poor and middle class, away from the top couple percentage points of income in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's interesting that for all the talk of reform, you mentioned the tax shift, and the other impetus seems to be just to cut taxes as well, primarily on the wealthy folks and corporations. How did reform turn into tax cut?
I wonder if it ever was a serious attempt at what folks, both Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliates would like to see in tax reform, and I'm becoming more and more cynical and starting to believe it was just a cover to pursue the same policies that they were pursuing the last biennium of shifting the tax burden to the middle class and poor.
One of the issues that I've been surprised hasn't gotten nearly the attention I thought it would is the House budget includes for the first time vouchers or a voucher scheme to allow students who go to private and religious schools to actually be to get taxpayer money. That's now in the conference committee. What are your thoughts about that, and why do you think we haven't heard more about what seems to be a big shift in our education policy?
I think that's intentional, that if you do throw that in the mix of this massive $20 billion budget and the discussions associated with that, it's much easier to get a significant policy shift done if you cloak it in a cloud of dust of $20 billion in spending. We got a lecture on the House floor that we shouldn't call them vouchers, and we had dueling dictionary definitions, and I think I was convinced that they are, in fact, vouchers. And what folks need to understand is that's money that's coming out of our public schools, resources that we're shifting away from our public schools, and that in the end really aren't going to enable a significant number, if any, of actual poor, low-income students to attend private schools. They're really just subsidized folks who probably could already afford to send their kids there anyway.
And finally, what do you make of the Moral Monday protests? There's been obviously a lot of discussion, thousands of folks coming to Raleigh, hundreds have been arrested. Senator Apodaca called them crap this week, I think.
I hadn't heard that.
And I wondered what your thoughts are about the protests and the folks who are taking part.
Well, I've been to the last two of them. I think that makes me an outside agitator. I was born and raised in North Carolina, went to school here, served in the Army most of the time at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and have got my ancestor Isaac Greer, who was the first Presbyterian minister born in the state of Georgia but died in North Carolina. So he was the original outside agitator in our family. I think anyone who dismisses these protests as a fringe element of outside agitators is not paying attention. 3 weeks ago, large portions of the clergy of my church were there. I see people from Wilmington and Asheville. I see veterans. I see Democrats. I see a lot of unaffiliateds. I know there are a few Republicans there also. They really are representing a pretty broad spectrum of North Carolinians who really are upset with the direction that this General Assembly has taken our state. If you dismiss them, you, I think, are doomed to failure.
The Republicans' response in a lot of places where I've talked to them have been, we're just doing what we said we were going to do. This is what we were elected to do. Do you think the voters of North Carolina voted for the things that we've seen in the last 3 years, but especially in the last 6 months?
No. They've gone well beyond anything that they hinted that they were going to do. This is not what the people of North Carolina asked for. I think the Republicans have convinced themselves that they were elected into power because the public is somehow in love with the Republican Party. I think there's a good argument to be made that the public was not satisfied with the direction that we Democrats were taking the state. But I think they're terribly upset over the excesses of the current administration. And I think also it's important to remember that this election were the first ones taking place in drastically gerrymandered and racially polarized legislative districts in which the number of seats won by Republicans is far out of proportion to the actual number of ballots cast for Republican candidates.
Well, Representative Martin, it's great to have you back in the House. Thanks for what you're doing in Raleigh. Thanks for being with us.
Chris, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Up next, the flawed economic thinking behind tax reform. Stay with us.